In May 2025, rice prices in Japan hit 4,233 yen, or about $30 per 5 kilograms, about twice as high as they were a year ago. Prices have gone up for over 15 weeks in a row. In response, the Japanese government released 600,000 tons of rice from its emergency food stockpiles, usually stored for natural disasters like earthquakes. But prices remain high. Supermarkets in Japan are announcing that they will sell rice from other countries like South Korea and even America. Yes, I'm talking about the most blasphemous of rice strains, Kalrose. Japan is nearly 100% self-sufficient in rice, and on the surface, that is something to be proud of, but not so much when you consider the system built around achieving that number. In today's video, we return to my favorite carb and dive into Japan's ongoing rice price crisis. The economics of farming certain crops fascinate me. Think about a pineapple. A pineapple takes about 2 years to grow, but once the pineapple plant gets established, it does not need much looking after. It's hardy and drought resistant, and the fruit also fetches a rather high price when sold. Rice is the pineapple's polar opposite. Its killer app is that it delivers a lot of calories without using a lot of land. It grows very fast, so fast that you can cycle through two crops in a single year. Economical rice farming, like semiconductor manufacturing, is all about scale and volume. The issue with Japan's rice fabs, however, is that they are not big enough to achieve those things. The average Japanese rice farm is very small. This was a deliberate industrial policy choice made by the government after World War II, which emphasized that farmland should be owned by the people working it. For this reason, land reforms limited family and company farmland ownership, as well as how land lease contracts can be terminated. These are all important tools to prevent absentee landlords from accumulating vast tracts of land. These land reforms, which were also adopted in Taiwan, are widely seen as a vital industrial policy measure in revitalizing the ruined agricultural economy and blunting the appeal of communism. The end result of it, however, is that Japan's 2.3 million farms are small and fragmented. Depending on which source you most believe, the average Japanese farm is from 0.6 to 2 hectares large, with land spread across several plots. This is really tiny. To compare, the average American farm is roughly about 188 hectares. This difference in scale means two things. First, the small size prevents the average Japanese farm from adopting yield-boosting measures practiced abroad, like sowing seeds via airplane. Second, it means that most Japanese rice farmers do the rice farming thing as a side gig. Farming does not earn them enough for a living. There are 2.1 million farming households in Japan, and 40% of them earn less than half a million yen, or $4,500 a year, from farming. The majority of these part-timers are rice farmers. This lack of financial sustainability, plus the fact that the average farmer is today 69 years old, plays a big role in Japan's declining farmer population. Why become a farmer if you can't do it full-time? What is interesting, however, is that Taiwan had a similar policy and land farm distribution structure, yet Taiwanese rice farms produce more rice per hectare per year, and are also more labor-efficient than their Japanese counterparts. Farm size matters, but something else is at play here. In the early 1940s, rice farmers sold their rice directly to the government. The government then resold the rice to the consumers at a set price. This was a wartime system and essentially rationing. Immediately after the war, there was nowhere near enough rice to go around, leading to widespread malnutrition and in some cases starvation. U.S. food aid at the time came primarily in the form of wheat. The American occupation authorities also promoted a more varied, i.e. less rice-dominant diet. One particularly successful campaign included school lunches made of wheat flour bread and milk. Consumption of rice in Japan peaked in 1962 at about 118 kilograms. Assuming that a bowl of white rice weighs about 60 grams, that is about 5.4 bowls a day. Fast forward half a century to 2016, and Japanese ate about 2.5 bowls of rice a year. Meanwhile, fat and oil consumption is up 2.7 times, milk and dairy 3.2 times, and meat 4.2 times. Throughout the same 1950s and 1960s time period, rice production methods, new rice strains, fertilizers, and mechanical equipment revolutionized rice yields. This declining demand trend entangled with the supply boom to leave the country with surpluses. Rice prices were also perceived as being too low, concerning the politically powerful farming population. But the government cannot afford to buy all the rice they wanted to put on the market. So what to do? So in 1970, the government instituted a policy called the Rice Acreage Control System, or the Gentan. The Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries, or MAF, sets a national rice production limit for the year based on some estimate of the country's demand. The production limit is below the full capacity of Japan's rice paddies, so subsidies are issued to the rice farmers to divert some of their rice paddy acreage away from planting rice. Farmers might instead plant soybeans, wheat, or barley on this land, or just leave it fallow. The Gentan was originally implemented as a temporary measure to tide the farmers over from the surpluses, but like with so many government policies, it ossified into a permanent thing. Alongside the Gentan system, of course, is a complicated system of tariffs that makes imports infeasible. And when certain trade agreements require the country to import rice, Japan has gone to some measures to avoid using that rice. I recall in my last rice video about how Japan had to import a minimum access amount of rice per its WTO treaty obligations, only to store that rice in warehouses until it deteriorated enough to be used for animal feed. These trade protections, combined with the Gentan system, has artificially made inefficient part-time farming sustainable. The rice plots are small enough and prices just good enough to make it feasible for a Japanese farmer to maintain a certain lifestyle, at a cost to the consumer, of course. You might argue that one upside of this government-managed rice market is that it might be able to keep prices stable. From 2022 to 2023, the prices of noodles and bread in Japan surged 8.1% and 11.1%, likely due to higher oil prices in wake of the Ukraine war. Meanwhile, rice prices actually fell. But you can also argue that it has left the system brittle, apt to disruption by supply or demand shocks. In 2023, a significant heat wave swept over Asia, setting temperature records all over the continent. Japan was also affected, with many areas making new record highs. Rice is sensitive to heat, preferring a moderate climate between 25 and 35 degrees Celsius, and going out of that range causes issues. The plant is even more sensitive to high heat during critical periods when the seedlings emerge and establish their roots. When exposed to too much heat, the rice plants suffer a heat shock that reduces yields and also turns their grains chalky. The chalkiness affects the rice's grade and value, though if it's not too bad, the rice still tastes okay. The 2023 heat waves caused rice quality in Japan to deteriorate. It was reported that at the end of October 2023, the proportion of first-grade rice had fallen 16 percentage points to just 59.6%. In response, it seems like Japanese retailers dipped into existing storage rather than sell inferior quality rice into the market. Considering all this, what happened next was predictable: rice shortages. Shelves went empty, and this sparked hoarding behavior from individuals and businesses, forcing stores to limit purchases to 1 5-kilogram bag each. People started to draw down from their inventories, and by June 2024, rice stores were already at a multi-year low. At the same time, the 2023-2024 period also saw the end of a 10-year-long decline in rice demand. Since 2014, Japan had seen annual rice demand declines by about 100,000 tons per year. This is due to major demographic trends like people getting older and families getting smaller. This trend finally ended in the 2023-2024 season when demand, quote-unquote, surged up 110,000 tons or 1.6% to about 7 million tons. This was in part blamed on Japan's tourism boom. Post-COVID conditions and a weak yen had fueled unprecedented tourism numbers, and these tourists love Japanese food like sushi and rice balls. Estimates of tourist rice consumption was about 51,000 tons, up 2.7-fold from the prior 12 months. In addition to these record-breaking tourist numbers, there were the already low inventories of 2024, several typhoons in the summer, and a major earthquake in August. The latter sparked panic buying that sent prices soaring. Despite all these acting factors, the 2024 rice harvest only increased about 180,000 tons from prior, which is not as much as you might expect with rice prices doubling. Again, this is because the Japanese domestic rice market is not a free one. So let us just remove the gentan system, right? Easy? However, a massive bureaucracy, both public and private, has been built up over the decades to manage, store, and deliver this rice, and it works hard to retain its power. Japan Agricultural Cooperatives, or JA, is the world's single largest and most powerful agricultural cooperative. To be precise, JA is a union of cooperatives at three different levels: national, prefectural, and municipal. However, I'll refer to them as a single organization. As described by Nicole Frainer in a fascinating book about rice agricultural policy in Japan, JA has embedded itself deeply into all parts of the agricultural sector and has gathered immense political power. To farmers, JA offers financial, marketing, insurance, welfare, real estate, travel, and educational services. Rice farmers are not obligated to sell their rice to JA, but have effectively no choice because JA provides all their insurance and financing. The JA's national entity is located in central Tokyo, close to the government and the ruling political party, LDP. It has deep connections to legislators, donors, and organizers, and uses this political clout to advocate for farmers, and in doing so, perpetuate its power. The Japanese government uses JA to administer gentan, and the policy is a major source of profits for the cooperative. After the government decides the national rice production number, JA passes the quota down through its bureaucracy until it reaches individual farmers. Prefectural and local quotas are distributed geographically without any recognition of differences of efficiencies. JA local cooperatives then cajole and pressure farmers into compliance, sometimes even resorting to collective penalties to keep people in line. So, the gentan artificially limits rice production to keep domestic rice prices high and presumably protect farms. But those same high prices suppress possible reforms. There have been attempts to reform the JA and the gentan itself, but as you might expect, this has not been easy. Technically speaking, the gentan was first reformed in the 2000s, and then, quote-unquote, abolished in 2017. But it's one of those things where the spirit of the law remains, even after its words have been stricken from the books. The direct government rice production quotas and subsidies were removed, but other forms of agricultural support remained. For example, direct payments to farmers who use rice paddies for growing, quote-unquote, strategic crops like wheat, or rice intended for animal feed. With this subsidy, it is more profitable for the farmers to grow feed rice than table rice. So really, this all feels like the same old acreage reduction policy. It is estimated that the full removal of gentan would reduce domestic rice prices by as much as 40%. But after 2017, rice prices stayed the same, because in reality, the reforms, quote-unquote, did little to actually dismantle the infrastructures suppressing rice production and encouraging more efficient rice farming. When the Japanese government first released its stores of stockpiled emergency rice, it sold most of that rice at auction, rather than directly sending it to retailers, restaurants, or wholesalers. Who ended up buying 97% of that rice? JA. JA holds the distribution network, so I guess it kind of makes sense. But the optics are not so great when JA officials have also criticized the government releasing its rice stockpiles as being against, quote, market principles, end quote. Those officials have also remarked in both text and speeches that rice prices had been historically too low, that those low prices had been an unsustainable situation, unfair to producers, and that this was all just a healthy correction. The remarks were panned in public and online for being somewhat tone-deaf, particularly when the Nagano JA chairman compared the price of a bowl of rice to an entire sandwich, and that he went to a local ramen shop and still got a free bowl of rice, so everything is okay. Anyway, Japan has built up an extensive infrastructure to support its policy goal of achieving 100% rice self-sufficiency. This infrastructure seems to have done the job a little too well. Now the government spends a great deal of money and resources trying to balance rice supply and demand each year. That is because of rice's quote-unquote special place in Japanese cuisine. But this infrastructure largely neglects other foods with significant calorie share of the Japanese diet. Japanese don't get 60% of their calories from rice anymore, like how it was in the 1960s. In 2023, Japan's self-sufficiency rate, when calculated on a calorie basis, was 38%, low compared to other developed countries. Based on 2019 numbers, Canada was 233% self-sufficient, Australia 169%, and the United States 121%. Okay, fine, those are countries with lots of land. But Switzerland, very mountainous and quite small, is at 54% per 2007 data, the UK 58%. So Japan trails far behind its comparables, though it does seem to be ahead of Korea. Rice is iconic in the Japanese diet, but these other foods are pretty special too. Ramen, for instance, is heavily dependent on food imports, including wheat, soybeans, and edible oils. Trading a bit of rice self-sufficiency for noodle or vegetable self-sufficiency might be a fair trade. We shall see how things go with trade agreements and tariffs, but I buy the arguments of a former Japanese agricultural ministry official named Kazuhito Yamashita, who argues that truer food security in terms of rice is better had by building a competitive rice industry. Since 1961, global production of rice has gone up by about 3.5 times. Some Asian countries like Vietnam, Thailand, the People's Republic of China, and India are now producing 2, 3, or 5 times as much rice as they were back then. Japan, on the other hand, today makes 35% less rice than the 16.1 million tons it produced in 1961. Had it followed the same 4x multiplier, crude analysis, but for illustrative purposes, rice production would be 64 million tons, more than major exporters Vietnam or Thailand. This gap is a result of both the acreage reduction policy and the rice farm's general inefficiency. And I see it as a missed opportunity to build up rice production capacity, secure domestic supply, and even generate a few export earnings. Now that this latest rice price crisis is so naturally prominent, the Japanese government is focused on blunting the trend. I feel confident it will succeed in that, but I have less confidence it will succeed in actually reforming the system behind all this. Alright everyone, that's it for tonight, thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the Patreon, and I'll see you guys next time.